Good evening. This is the voice of... Good evening to you all, and this is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening... Sorry about the mix-up, and once again, welcome to Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening, we'll talk about Burundi's withdrawal from the International Criminal Court. And with us tonight is Karine Kaneza, the spokesperson for the Women and Girls Movement for Peace and Security in Burundi. Karine joins us by phone from here in the nation's capital in Washington. Good afternoon, Karine.
Good afternoon, Douglas, and good afternoon to our listeners.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And also we have regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Thanks very much for joining us, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. As I said, our topic tonight, we're going to be talking about Burundi's attempt to withdraw from the ICC. Burundi's parliament has approved a bill that calls for the country to withdraw from the International Criminal Court. After the lower house of parliament passed the bill Wednesday morning, it was presented to the Senate and adopted unanimously. The bill now awaits the final signature by President Pierre Nkurunziza. If he does sign, Burundi will be the first country to withdraw from the ICC. Let me begin with Karine here in Washington. First of all, your reaction to this development?
Not really surprised. I think for some it might have come as a surprise for some of us. I think it's consistent with what the government in Burundi has been doing for the last couple of years, anyway. Mm. I think when one looks at their reaction to the different resolutions and decisions that have been passed by either the African Union or the United Nations Security Council, this is just one of the decisions they've taken to postpone any intervention from the international community, and to mobilize their base either inside Burundi or outside of Burundi around a certain narrative and rhetoric they've been pursuing. Mm-hmm. For the last 18 months.
I see. Suleiman, from your vantage point in Durban, what was your immediate reaction?
The way my sister has said, it's not surprising. It is expected, because the regime in Burundi is almost a replica of the many regimes which we have in the continent. That is what is expected of them. Instead, in a broader picture, it has got a lot of positives on the side of the activists. Mm-hmm. But in short, as you said, it's not surprising, because it shows the ineptitude of the regime. It shows the callousness of the regime. It exposes the selfishness of the regime, the arrogance of the regime, the intransigence of the regime. That is what we expect with such a regime, which has so many on the continent.
Mm-hmm. Karine, there are people who believe that the trigger point could have been the UN report that was released pointing out widespread human rights violations by the security forces. Do you share that belief?
No, I don't. I believe that the UN report was the excuse found, probably waited for by the government. Let me just also say this. I believe that there's an attempt that has been put forward for the last couple of months by the government to bring about a narrative that really distract the international community in terms of what's going on in Burundi. If one is to think about the UN report, it does talk about, it mentions 17 methods of torture. We believe there are more than that. 14 mass graves. We believe there are more than that that have been officially mentioned. So not to withdraw from the ICC takes away, in a sense, the urgency the urgency to take actions in terms of the international community. Here we are talking about what would have made them take that decision. Why did they react like that? In one word, it's some say it's because they actually think that they are guilty of what has been allegedly put forward. But at the same time, there's some gymnastics I see. Just to distract the opinion of the international community, and one should I think for us we need to keep focused, and we need to maintain the issues at the table they should be.
Yeah, but trying to put in perspective or figure out the strategy of the Burundi regime, their attempts to pull out. Wouldn't help them much because they would remain under the court's jurisdiction at least for a year, and the withdrawal would not spare the country from the current investigations. First with you, Suleiman, they still have, if the investigations are going on, they can't avoid them by withdrawing from ICC.
It doesn't help the regime at all. As you have said, yes, even if they withdraw now, they have to remain there for a whole year. The investigation will have to continue. Over and above, so long as the atrocities are recorded, they will still have to meet their day in court. Even if they withdraw from the ICC, the ICC is not the only remedy to those who have committed atrocities. If the international community, if the AU, if the humanity out of Burundi is determined to bring Mr. Nkurunziza and his regime to book, they will have to come to book. They have nowhere to escape because they are not there first. So long as the people continue to be persecuted, so long as people continue to be killed, going out of the ICC won't help them, because already we have had a special court for Rwanda. We have had the African court, the African chambers, which prosecuted Hissène Habré. So even if they run away, still it depends on the international community and the African brothers and sisters to continue the activism and to make sure that they are brought to book.
Karine, what's your take on that?
I agree with what my brother Suleiman is saying. I would like to just add as well that we also see an attempt to mobilize some solidarity, what we call irresponsible solidarity, from some African states, which have also voiced some discontent towards the International Criminal Court. You see, if you look at what the government has been saying a couple of months ago, they have tried to revive some sort of mixed up, very disturbed notion of Pan-Africanism around Burundi, saying that it's an isolated state, that they are fighting some sort of imperialism from the international community, imperialist actions. There's an attempt to, again, as I said, to distract and mobilize, either in the region or outside of the region, on the continent, a few countries here and there who might be willing to buy into that type of rhetoric. But again, as Suleiman said, this is over. I think the game is over. I think in 2016. No one can hide atrocities. You might postpone the action of justice. You might postpone your judgment as long as you can. But thanks to technology, to a certain jurisprudence and doctrine that's been developed for the last 20 years, whoever is responsible will have to account one day.
I see.
For his or her actions.
Yes. Following up on Karine's point there, Suleiman, other countries, including Kenya, South Africa, Namibia, have floated the idea of withdrawing from the court. Okay, the Kenyan parliament did pass a motion to leave in 2013, and the governing party in South Africa said that it planned to leave too. But in both cases, there were no concrete steps taken. Do you see the Burundian example catching fire, because even people like Museveni in the neighborhood there have called ICC very useless?
As my sister has said, they have tried to mix up issues. They have tried to recruit some honest Africans, some honest governments like Kenya and South Africa. Otherwise, the rest who seem to support them, it's good that they support them. They support Burundi because those are rogue regimes. I think it will help the activists. It will help to expose the nature of the regimes on the continent. Because if Burundi is supported by Uganda, Uganda has got a lot of atrocities. Uganda has been in a civil, it had a civil war for almost 20 years. It had a civil war, another 5 years, which took about half a million. The other one took 1.5 million. Uganda entered DRC, entered Rwanda. So there's a lot. Itself, the country itself, the way it is read, is not different from Burundi. Actually, Burundi is picking it up from Uganda, from Rwanda, from DRC. So if those ones support them, I think it is time for the international community to realize the nature of the regimes which we have on the continent. And these are the regimes which they have supported all along, mm-hmm. because they fit into the narrative of fighting terrorism. So they have now to know what kind of regime. If you see the nature of the type of atrocities carried out in Burundi, they don't deserve any mercy whatsoever. It is just utter arrogance and selfishness and callousness to allow a population to flee out of the country for the sake of an individual and his clique. I think the eyes of the international community are being woken up. Thank God, if many of these rogue regimes would support them. But for God's sake, let's hope that the governments in Kenya and South Africa will not join the band, because they don't belong to the group which they want to join.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I totally agree with what Suleiman is saying. And I think what needs to be said to the countries of the region and the wider continent is that I think the contemporary African leadership today has to be reminded, or maybe has to see, to understand and apprehend the anomaly that the current regime in Burundi represents. I think it's very important. This is not, I think we tend to brush over certain realities because I think we get bombarded in this age of technology with lots of information. They might have intelligence reports and human rights reports. And I think at some point, even they themselves get a little bit probably overwhelmed. But if we are to see, if you think of, as Suleiman was saying, of what is being done in Burundi today, when you think that wearing a uniform, a military uniform, is a source of insecurity today in Burundi. If you think of the number of officers who've been abducted, killed, tortured by civilians, who are members of the militia, armed and organized. When you think of the chain of command between the highest authority in Burundi and this youth militia, it's unbelievable. And if yesterday the world was unanimous in condemning a regime like that of Idi Amin Dada, what is the difference with what we see today in Burundi? When we think of, and I'm citing the UN report, this is not a personal view, but when you think of mass graves in some residences linked to the highest authority of a country, last time I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and we're thinking of how in certain countries, a scandal like having your opponents in the West, having your opponents under surveillance, will call for your resignation. For instance, you think of us Africans. You have a mass grave one, two, three, four, 14. We're thinking we are being reminded of people being being buried outside of our borders. This is what the UN report is mentioning. So I do, and I actually even understand why the government would say, "Oh, we are withdrawing, and we're having three." One thing you haven't mentioned is the three officials of the UN who've been deemed a persona non grata.
Yes. Mm.
This is evidence of not that even what they're saying is true, but that there is a much darker truth that is waited to be known. And I think that's very important for us to understand, that for a government, as you mentioned correctly, to say, well, we are not going to stay with the International Criminal Court, knowing the diplomatic consequences of such action. This is not because of the UN report. This is because of what's going to be known. I believe that that the violations are much higher, and that the atrocities have reached a scale which until today is still unknown.
I see. Yeah, for those joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the Burundi withdrawal from the International Criminal Court. Our panelists are Serena Kaneza, the spokesperson for the Women and Girls Movement for Peace and Security in Burundi, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Suleiman, Karin was mentioned a lot of things there. The trouble is the trouble is that some people have said some of these strong men on the continent have gotten away of going away with these atrocities. It's been happening in Burundi now for some time. You remember Kenya refused to cooperate more or less, and the case went nowhere. So what's the way then? What should happen then? Because people will talk, people will write, and then nothing will happen.
Actually, at the moment, the rumor sister has said the lid has been opened. It is just open. It is clear. Burundi is a classic case. Other countries have been hiding what has been happening. Unfortunately, what has happened in Burundi has happened in DRC. It has happened in Uganda. It happens in most of these African countries where the dictators are holding the country, the citizen at ransom. At the moment, three quarters of our country, if you start from, let's say from south, from Angola, Zimbabwe, Central African Republic, Congo Republic, DRC, Rwanda, Burundi, Gambia, Chad, you go Eritrea, Ethiopia, Cameroon, Gambia, Gabon, all these countries are essentially under state of emergency 365 days. They are under state of emergency. It is the rule of the gun. The security forces do what they want. The people have been suppressed to the maximum. That is why Ethiopia is burning.
Mm-hmm.
And all this one at the complicity of the international community. Right now, what has happened in Burundi is pricking the conscience of the international community. The African people are asking now, for how long will you continue with the double standard? For how long will you continue without taking action? For how long are we going to continue looking at Burundi? Because Burundi because Nkurunziza is contributing soldiers to Africa, to Somalia, the African Union in Somalia, therefore should not be touched. How long are we going to protect an individual at the expense of the citizens, where almost half of the population runs out of the country and you keep quiet because he's contributing soldiers to Somalia? For how long will Museveni oppress people because he's contributing soldiers to Somalia, Darfur, whatever? So this is the critical point now. It is pricking the conscience of the international community to stop the narrative that you have to have development before you have good governance. We have to change the narrative when we are dealing with the African continent as far as the international community is concerned. So it is a test for the international community, and it is the job of the activists to continue pressurizing the international community. Once action has been taken on Nkurunziza, it should be taken on everybody on the continent.
Yeah, go ahead, because I want to ask you again, the folly or the irony of having to contribute peacekeeping forces elsewhere when at home the country's on fire.
Yeah. Nkurunziza is going to take it over.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, she can go ahead.
This is just it's an irony. You have the contributing states such as Burundi within AMISOM. You have their participation in UN organizations such as the UN Human Rights Council. They are a member state as well. You have the African Union Peace and Security Council. There are many anomalies, but the first one is obviously having 5,000 troops or approximately 5,000 troops on outside of your country where your military is not safe and is not in security. So that is an anomaly that is. For some of us, that's completely beyond understanding, because it should be clear. And if I'm not mistaken, it's also part of the security agreement that they have with the country, with the funding countries. Mm-hmm. It's clearly stated that they have to be respecting human rights standards in their countries of origin. So something has to be said and something has to be done urgently. Mm. Going back to what my brother Suleiman was saying in terms of really holding our region accountable, I just wanted to add something. That I think Burundi is a case study on the continent. I think it's a good example of an African narrative that's being developed that was started by other countries, like Burkina Faso. I like to see this as what we call a third revolution on the continent. The first one has been waged when we were fighting for our independence. The second was to oust, really, regimes such as the Idi Amin Dada. Today, this is the third battle. And as you remember, this struggle was not launched by the military or by some ethnic group that was aspiring to put a certain ethnic group at the head of the country. These were young people on the street on April 26th who decided to say no. They were Hutus, they were Tutsis, they were from different backgrounds. And I think that's the novelty we're seeing today. And the fight has not stopped. And I think it's important to say that it has been legitimized and strengthened by the UN report and other decisions that have been made, although unsuccessful up until now.
Suleiman, do you think this move maybe, as she says, helps empower the people themselves to take whatever steps they have to do?
The way my sister, I totally agree with my sister. The way she's saying, it is a people's movement. It is started with Egypt, with the Arab,
Arab Spring.
Then my sister said, we have got Burkina Faso. They started before Ethiopia. All the activists, what they need to do is continue supporting it. And there is hope that since it is a people's movement, it is likely to succeed. The people of Ethiopia have risen up. The people of Uganda are restless. The people of DRC are restless. And I'm sure they are going to do the same as what is happening in Burundi. And then my sister said, this is the third struggle, and we hope it will be sustained, and we hope it will bring an end to the suffering of the people of Africa. Why should Africa enjoy other standards unlike other regions. In Europe, in America, soldiers cannot raid and they have a mass grave anywhere in the country, and then things go on as usual.
Mm-hmm.
And then the leader continues to be in state house. Even killing just one or two, three citizens, it can lead the minister to resign. But here we are in Africa. In Africa, they raid, they continue, and then it is business as usual. We are saying, let it be the end. Let this one be the third struggle of the continent. We put it right for once and for all. So we have the hope, and we should continue the struggle. The activists should continue to be pressurized, because these leaders, none of these dictators, have been nurtured by the international community. The MICC has said they have been approved by the IMF and World Bank. They are approved, they are financed by the IMF and World Bank. They are seconded to the international bodies, the Security Council. They confuse all. In short, they are nurtured by the big powers themselves. It's high time to know that these are immoral leaders. They don't deserve the respect they give them. To the African people on the ground, they see them as proteges of the international community. So it is time for the international community to know that the people on the ground are yearning for assistance to get rid of these rogue regimes.
Lastly, we're running out of time, Sarin. Karin, what do you see happening in the short term as a blowback to this move?
What I see happening is a growing isolation of the regime in Bujumbura. I see a growing isolation. I see, I would like to see a stronger unity within the EAC region, a better understanding of the utopia, I would call that, that they have on Burundi, on the government, stronger mobilization within the diaspora and different groups that have been consistently committed in participating in the resolution of this crisis, and hopefully better international solidarity.
Mm-hmm. Suleiman, last word, 30 seconds. Do you see something changing, or maybe, I don't know, what do you think?
Crimes against humanity have been committed in Burundi. They have been committed in DRC. They have been committed in Uganda. They have been committed in Rwanda. The whole East African community is littered with people's blood. I think the people are tired. I think I'm seeing a hope in the future. I think the people of Burundi have been resilient, the way my sister has said. And with more activism, with more pressure on the international community, I think justice will be done, and I think there will be change in Burundi and in the whole East African region and on the continent as a whole.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Karin Kaneza, the spokesperson for the Women and Girls Movement for Peace and Security in Burundi. Thanks very much for being on the show, Karin.
Thank you, Douglas, and thank you, Suleiman. It was a pleasure.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to join.
And thank you, Suleiman, as usual, for being here, too.
It was a pleasure to join my sister, and thank you giving us the opportunity.
Thank you. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Audrius Regis. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any or part of this program, you can listen to it on our website. You just go to www.vnews.com, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vnews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.